Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar. Others promise the moon, they deliver the sun. We're also brought to you by Rose's Cafe, a favorite in the Cow Hollow neighborhood of San Francisco for the past 20 years. Today's guest is Mark Purdy, columnist with the Bay Area News Group. Well, Mark, I want to start with your column, and I was really on board with it. I had similar sentiments about what happened with Hunter Strickland, Bryce Harper, and especially Buster Posey, because I know Posey took a lot of heat for just standing there and not tackling Harper when he was headed to the mound. And I felt just like you did, that he was disapproving of that whole situation. He's still getting that heat, though. So what's your overall impression of how this goes going forward with Strickland, and, you know, whether or not that really hurts his chances of staying with the Giants?
Yeah, Joe. At the very least, I think Strickland's job is hanging by a thread, at the very least, at this point. I believe, just in my, how many years now covering baseball, sometimes people tell you stuff by their body language as much as the words that come out of their mouth. And that's what I really thought was happening with Buster Posey, and not just Buster Posey. You know, guys like Hunter Pence and George Kontos could not have been delighted to have to wrestle Strickland off the field. And, you know, he was still fighting him as they went in the dugout, you know, to get back out there to do what exactly, I don't know. Strickland, I only interact with him in the locker room, and he'll answer questions, and I guess he's probably an okay human being. I know he's done some good philanthropic things back in his home state of Georgia.
Yeah.
But on the field, he's just a stubborn guy who relies on that fastball way too much. He thinks it's invincible. Or invisible, and it's neither, because guys can time up on it and hit big home runs, and as Bryce Harper did 3 years ago, I get it. I know the unwritten rules, but really 3 years later, and so when I saw Posey stand, I mean, he actually takes a little half step backwards as Harper is moving toward the mound. I just tried to crawl inside his head in that column and kind of think, you know, he's probably thinking like, oh man, dude, really? I mean, you know, is this really going to happen? And, you know, come on. Because it's not just that part of it. He's stubborn about it. I remember, and I referenced it in the column, and thank you for bringing it up. People can go there to mercurynews.com and read it. I was at a game in earlier in May. They were playing the Reds. It was a Thursday night game, and it's a tie game, and they bring in Strickland in the eighth, and Cozart of the Reds is at the plate. Strickland gets an 0-2 count on him. And what do you think he does?
Fastball.
He keeps throwing it fastball. And Cozart hits a double, drives in the winning, turned out to be the winning run. And after the game, Bruce Bochy, the manager, you know, is like, you know, he's so diplomatic, but he was all but, you know, for Bochy, like screaming, like, I can't believe this guy threw that 0-2 pitch. because Bochy is a diplomat and a good guy, he just talked about, we have too many of our pitchers throwing, you know, making bad choices on 0-2 pitches when you should be taking another approach. So in other words, nibbling some or trying to get people to swing at pitches outside the strike zone, or at least try something different than a pitch, a fastball in the middle of an 0-2 count. Your pitcher has the advantage. You should try to take, you know, leverage that. And instead, Strickland does this, and he's done it before. And I think that played into this scenario of Posey standing at the plate and watching too. Like, does this guy listen to anything in his head other than, I'm a strong man and can throw it down the middle. You know, it has to be really maddening for them. And if Posey is, as I perceive him to be, and you're in that clubhouse enough too, I mean, I think he's still the center of gravity inside that clubhouse. I think when guys stand up to say anything or do anything, they kind of cast their glance over there to Posey to see how he's reacting, or is this okay if I do this? Not in an intimidating sense, but this guy, you know, has won 3 world championships for him behind the plate and most important and best player. And so if you are making Buster Posey react the way he did the other day, I think that means your job's in trouble. And because of all this other stuff I mentioned too. Now that would mean, of course, the Giants would have to patch up and find another setup guy as an eighth, but you know, what's their record now? They're not so great now with this way. So I don't know what kind of trade value Strickland has, but it's hard for me to believe he'll still be here by the end of the season.
Well, it was almost
that's
hard.
My opinion.
Yeah, that, I like your opinion. It was almost hard for me to believe that he did this. I mean, this is a vendetta thing, and that's why I don't blame Posey. It wasn't a team issue. This was one pitcher who had this macho nature about him and decided, you know, I'm going to throw at him. And I was a little surprised because I thought he got past that. I thought he had matured because remember in the 2014 World Series against the Royals, he had his issues there. I thought he learned a lot from that. I actually thought the fastball you're talking about, the Cozart, I thought that was more of the exception to the rule for him lately. I thought he had learned. He was throwing more breaking balls. He seemed like he knew how to work both sides of the plate a little bit better. I was just thinking, wow, this guy is becoming more favorable to Bruce Bochy. And then he does this, and it just cancels out everything. I was actually surprised that he went in this direction.
Well, you know, you hate to... look, they're playing the game. We aren't. They're professional athletes. We aren't. But, you know, what's inside his head? Sometimes I don't get it either. And, you know, he clearly, when Harper stepped in the batter's box, this guy saw red 3 years later. Right. And so he's not mature. By doing that, he's not mature. And then, you know, the other part about Posey too, and we should note in fairness, that he said was, you know, he does have this formerly mangled ankle that's held together by pins, and he didn't want to go in the middle of the brawl and all that, and maybe has even been coached not to do that. But I still think I'm right about the body language, and I don't know what you know some guy, you know what, Joe, it's like. You know, I've coached Little League. Maybe you have too. And I never coach old kids older than like 8 or 9 because then it gets too crazy.
Serious, yeah.
But you know, when you're I love coaching the little kids about baseball, and at least I did when my son was that age, and you know, teaching them the basic fundamentals. And one of them is always. Because kids want to do this, when you hit a ball to the infield, a grounder to the infield, and you're running to first base, you run through the bag. You don't run to the bag and stop, right? Kids want to run. They see the bag, they run there, and they just want to stop, right? They don't want to run through the bag and turn right, which is the faster way to get there, right? And so you run drills and you say, okay, let's run a drill where you hit the ball, run through the bag, hit the ball, run through the bag, right? We run through the bag on a ground ball like that. If it's going to be, you know, and then during the game, you know, before they go to bat, what are you going to do if you hit a ground ball? Run through the bag, coach, run through the bag, right. And then they come to the plate in the game, they hit a ground ball, and what do? Some of them run and stop on the base. You know, they don't run through the back. And afterwards, you're like, remember how we talked about that? Remember how you want to run through? Oh, yeah, coach. Yeah.
Didn't sink in. Yeah.
You know, and no. And so when I see things like Hunter Strickland the other day, you know, we're like, you know, okay, so you've coached him. You've told him, take a different approach. And then he still does that. I think back, you know, some guys, great as athletes as they are, because some of those kids in Little League are really good athletes, but they don't, it doesn't soak in, or just, it's something in their brain doesn't click. And whenever I see almost any sport, I'll see, why, you know, I'm surely that guy's been coached not to do that. Why is it? I think back to the Little League, like some, you know, yeah, the term coachable, right? some kids
just not
just want to go down. No, they just want to, they're just going to go down to stop on the back. They're not going to run through. And it falls through. Is that an okay analogy? I mean, yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, some kids just don't mature in that fashion.
We'll have more with Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group right after this. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower Elite Commercial and Elite Residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your SunPower solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. What about now? I mean, you talk about Strickland maybe being moved. And now it's become to this point where you're 2 months through the season. You're pretty far out of first place. You got three really good teams ahead of you. And now there's talk about becoming sellers instead of buyers. And it's been a long time since the San Francisco Giants were sellers, before the first World Series in 2010. And I don't know that the fan base is ready for that, but is that the wisest move? And it starts really with Johnny Cueto, who has the opt-out in his contract, and who knows if he'll stay around. And maybe you have value and you start getting young players, but do you tear this thing down completely and make a lot of moves and just kind of start over, or do you stick with it, or do you kind of go somewhere in between?
Well, I think what you do, and the Giants do have intelligent baseball right. people. They didn't do a very good job over last winter, apparently, from what we're seeing. You have a plan that's like 2 or 3 years out. You know, I don't think the Giants are in a place or in a market where you want to go through a full 3, 4, 5 year rebuilding project like some teams do. So you've got to decide, you know, I think Bruce Bochy said the other night, you know, these core players, I'm paraphrasing here. He said the core players have to step up, or maybe they might not be right. core players anymore. Right. And so you have to decide which of those guys you want to be, you know, I think you've got to have this plan so that in 2 or 3 seasons, you're back contending again. I guess I'm not totally writing off this season, but we're like Yogi Berra said, right?
It's getting late early
out here. And so what do you want the roster to look like in 3 years? You work back from that. And I don't think they should rule it, but in short answer to your question, I don't think they should rule out anything, but you don't just break up the team to break it up. You got to have an architecture in place and figure out, okay, well, if we do trade Hunter Strickland or if we do trade Cueto, what exactly are we looking, this is not nuclear science, what exactly are we looking for that will fit into what we like and what we perceive can be, you know, the part of the team that helps us get back. I mean, the real question is about all this money they're paying some of these people, and can they dump that, or how's that affect in terms of the the overall payroll and the the ceiling of the salaries and so forth. It's as much now in baseball a math equation as anything else. I, short answer, I don't think you rule anything out, and I don't think it's too early to think seriously about that. With the trade deadline approaching sooner than you think, I think that's what the month of June has to be for them. They're simultaneously going to watch what's going on in the field, as well as talking a lot on the phone, talking about, you know, general manager Bobby and I guess Brian Saban still gets involved in some of this.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's going to be a month. Your podcast will be amazing during the month of June because you'll be talking all about this. Like who should be traded? Why are not? And I don't know. Who do you think? Who would you put out there? I mean, Cueto, I mean, I love watching him pitch, and he's, you know, maybe their best guy right now. But if he has value that can get them where they want to be in 2 or 3 years, then you've got to make
I think
that
so,
move.
Because, see, I thought I was one of the people who was saying after the first month, it's way too early to think about anything, even though Bumgarner went out. You know, he's going to come back at some point, way too early. But now I'm looking at it saying, okay, you got a little more than 100 games to go in the season. You would have to play pretty much 700 baseball the rest of the way to be a playoff team that has a legitimate chance. So I'm thinking maybe you bust it up a little bit, and if you can get something great for Cueto, that's good. And, you know, like you said, Strickland, others. And then you start playing some of the younger guys. But the problem is with that, Mark, and I want to get your thoughts on it. You look at a guy like Christian Arroyo. He was tearing it up in AAA. It hasn't really translated into the major leagues. He's struggling. I mean, he had his great moments early on. But some of these younger guys, I mean, when you give them a chance that young, that early, Austin Slater is a guy who's being talked about. It's hard. It's like they really do need that seasoning in the minor leagues.
No, well, yeah, you're right about a couple things. One was you're right when you said it was still too early. You were right. I mean, but I think June 1st is kind of the date where you sort of get a handle on what you've got. And you're also correct in that they probably brought up Arroyo too soon. I think they knew when they brought him up, they were probably bringing him up too soon, and I think they know some of the other guys. So here's the question. So now let's say you trade Cueto or Strickland or whatever. The danger would be you'd get somebody who's, you know, a veteran and can put into left field or whatever. And now maybe, I don't think that's what you do. What you try to get is get prospects who are already a step above Arroyo and some of those guys in their development. I mean, maybe they're not established guys yet, but they're ahead of where Arroyo and some of these other people you're mentioning are. In other words, they're the guys who, like, in 2 years, like Arroyo, I think in 3 or 4 years could be a very good.
Yeah, he's only 21. Leader. He just got the AAA this year.
Right. So what you want is guys who you think can be that in another year or two, not three or four. And that's the target to me if you're making trades, because if you start trading guys for veterans who only have a few years or 1 or 2 years left on their contract or in their careers, just to try to get something done this year and still get back into it, I think that's the wrong approach, because you're going to be at the same place then at the end of this season. So that's my opinion, but that's where your scouts earn their money. You know, find those prospects that are between where Christian Arroyo is right now but could develop into somebody like Brandon Crawford, right, at another position, in another year or two. In other words, just bubbling below a full-fledged excellent
on the cusp
leader.
Of success.
On the cusp, that's the phrase I was looking for. I knew you would come up with it. I knew you'd go. My dog is here in my den as I'm doing this, which was in the dog just nodded. Yes, on the cusp.
More with Mark Purdy in just a moment.
Right about the time when AT&T Park had groundbreaking ceremonies in the late 90s, San Francisco was celebrating the opening of Roses Cafe at 2298 Union Street. Now, 20 years later, Roses continues to provide a warm, friendly atmosphere, and you can still count on great food. Italian fare created using organic local produce, fresh seafood, humanely raised meats, and free-range poultry. Roses bakes all of their own pastries and bread. Open 7 days a week, they serve breakfast, lunch, dinner, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Check out their menu and hours at www.rosescafesf.com. The next next time you're driving to or from AT&T Park, stop by Rose's Cafe in Cow Hollow at 2298 Union Street in San Francisco.
Let's talk about how all of this affects the attendance, because, I mean, yeah, you've got your sellout streak, which is way over 500 now. You know, you're selling out every game, and I guess the rest of the year is safe. But I wonder about how it affects the fan base, because they're just so used, they're so spoiled by winning, so used to winning every year. And now, you know, you're not totally tearing it down, like you said, but I just wonder, you know, if you go through the rest of the summer and you're not in contention, what that does to everybody's attitude.
Well, I don't think people are probably going to like it, but no. I don't think they like it now. You know, I mean, this is your brand. You have to kind of branch out into a larger perspective of the Bay Area sports, professional sports marketplace in general. I think it is the kind of place where people, you know, they don't, when teams go bad, they don't get angry and, throw things and curse. We're just not that kind of market, but we do move on to the next thing. That's what happens. And I know, you know, I guess probably the team, because I work in San Jose at the Mercury News, mercurynews.com. The team I'm probably most familiar with is the Sharks, and their ownership and front office. Now, hockey's a little different deal. I understand that they believe they cannot, that people, if they were bad for a couple years in a row, the crowds would definitely stop showing up. So that's why they've tried to, you know, they've kept around some veterans a long time to try to stay in contention every year, and they have. But they're going to pay for a price for it eventually, I think. But that's their idea. They don't think the team can afford to get bad. Otherwise, people will stop showing up. The Giants do have all these tickets sold. It's still baseball, not hockey. But I think, yes, people will stop showing up. But, you know, what's the alternative? I don't know. You aren't going to – this is not an instant fix thing with the Giants. And, ultimately, we're not taking the financial hit if people don't show up, right? So, it doesn't concern me too much. I think the big thing is the team playing hard, and are they putting at least an entertaining product on the field that's not that you don't go like, oh man. I mean, like this is about the Giants podcast, but I mean, like the A's right now are, I mean, that they're not going anywhere either this year, and they're either striking out or hitting home runs, right? I guess that part's entertaining, but they're horrible on defense, which doesn't make me want to go see them play. I don't want to go see a team play bad defense. There's a phrase I use a lot, you know, I like to see baseball played properly. I like, you know, which means, you know, crisp fielding, thrown to the right base, you know, smart base running. Even if your team is not, superior to the opponent talent-wise, you can still do those things when you get the opportunity. And the real baseball fans will appreciate that no matter what. There is, I believe, as you kind of imply, there are a number of bandwagon fans. And you know what? That's actually okay, because to me, that bandwagon fans are what incentivize pro teams to do better. To try, so... your question is, what happens to the attendance? The attendance will dip. We're not kidding anybody, right? I mean, they announced those sellouts, but they're not sellouts now anyway. It doesn't mean the Giants couldn't be fun to watch if they play baseball properly, but fans may have to take a couple years here to. I mean, remember those years? I'm going off in all directions. The years when they had Barry Bonds and not much else, or at least they were not winning because they kept trying to patch and fill around Barry Bonds.
At the end
of
his tenure, really.
And that was kind of because the Giants, I perceived, and you probably did too. You can weigh in on this. They believe that we have to keep Barry here to keep fans from coming to the ballpark, and we paid for the ballpark privately, so we got to pay off the ballpark, so we got to get the fans in the ballpark and have them buy tickets. So the way to do that is to have Barry here, whether we're winning big or not, they'll come out to see him. I want to believe the Giants fans have kind of moved on from that model, and that if and that thanks to guys like you and you know, the broadcasters, Kruko and Kuiper and all the broadcasters, that people now understand maybe more about how to play baseball properly, and that fans will show up to watch that. But I'm probably dead wrong. They'll go, you know, the new Cabernets will be out, and their attention will be drawn by that, you know, it's sailing, it's opening day on the bay, and we'll get on a boat, maybe they'll become, but probably not, Earthquake soccer fans. I don't know. Yeah, they'll be enough fans to move on. But those of us who are listening to this podcast are baseball people, right? And we'll always pay attention to baseball. And if the Giants are playing properly, yeah, I think people will still turn out.
What could happen is they could be like the Yankees, where, you know, you make some trades, you get the players that you were talking about that are above Arroyo and on the cusp. And if they get those players, they could be right back in contention next year, like the Yankees are this year. I mean, they took 1 year where they made some good deals. So then you really don't have the dip in the fan base.
Yeah, not a big dip. Yeah, that's a good example, what the Yankees did. Right. And there are other teams that seem to have that knack, too. You know, who can we think of that's that way? It seems like, I'm at sea here a little bit because I'm not looking at the standings. But, you know, the Orioles are one of those teams that kind of seem to get in the mix every now and then, because they're almost never horrible. Yeah. It seems to me, you know, it's, I don't know. That's the real question. Like, do you want to do what the Astros did? And Astros did just totally break it down and end up with a very, very, very good team right now. Or I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of focused on the Warriors right now, because I'm kind of covering that, but of course I'm keeping an eye on baseball. I love baseball. Are the Rockies for real? How did they do?
Well, I mean, they've always had the lineup. I guess, you know, they're getting the pitching more so than they did before. So that's how that works. Yeah. But the Warriors are a good example of how once you get that core together and it can stick together and you start adding to it, then things change. And, you know, the Giants still have the core. They just have to add to it.
Well, who in your mind? I mean, maybe this is another podcast. Maybe this is another time people are tired of listening to us. I hope not, because this is great stuff. But who in your mind is?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Now? You know, there's no. That's yeah, there's not podcast, that many maybe. Players that are untradeable. But I would say, yeah, Posey, Crawford, Panic, Belt is still to me not the core guy. I mean, I think they could end up trading him, but I think those three guys, you know, Bumgarner, of course. That to me would be your core. I don't think you're going to trade those guys. Everybody else is kind of just up for grabs right now.
Yeah. So when you talk about, you know, the Warriors like holding the core together, I mean, in baseball, there are more, again, Captain Obvious, there's a bigger roster. There are more positions, to try to fill. But what'd you name? Four or five people? I mean, is that a big enough?
Really, really three, and maybe four if you count Belt. So yeah, it's not a huge core, and you know, yeah.
I agree. Belt should not be in that list right now, and Panic is kind of.
Well, he
say it again.
Yeah.
On the cusp of not. Being
yeah, he's
in the
definitely
core.
Dipped for after that first month. So
I think he's one of the guys that Bochy was talking about the other day. The core produce. Players have got to do better.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot for your time. You gave more than enough time here. Enjoy the NBA Finals, and then when that's over, I'll see you at the ballpark soon.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back there. You know, it in a weird way, it's going to be maybe the most interesting Giants summer since 2014. Because there's, if again, this is another way a baseball fan can approach it and enjoy himself or herself at the ballpark. Like, watch it and try to figure out about some of this stuff we're talking about. Who, you know, who are the core guys and who's going to be here and who's not? I mean, you can still go to the ballpark and, you know, there was pardon me if I've quoted this guy before. There was a Civil War historian named Bruce Catton.
Yeah, okay.
Who had a great quote about, you know, baseball is the best conversation piece America's ever invented. And that's still going to happen at the ballpark this summer, at AT&T Park this summer. Like, people are going to be talking about this. Maybe they aren't going to be talking about winning another World Series, but the real baseball fans will be talking about this, and that's going to be very interesting, and I hope interesting to write about, because I got to write a bunch of columns about it.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks a lot again. I appreciate it, and definitely talk to you soon.
You know what? This was on the cusp of being your best podcast.
It's on the cusp. We'll angle to make sure we get to the cusp, and then beyond the cusp.
Okay.
That's Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group. Join us again next week for another edition of Inside China Basin. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.